As usual, I like to learn something from a sefer, and the sefer that I picked this time, I think, is especially meaningful. I'll explain in a minute why. The truth is, for somebody who reads a little bit, who thinks a little bit, Chanukah is the hardest yontif for us to really identify with in a certain sense. Paro, Mitzrim, Arabs, I don't think anyone has a tender spot for them, and I don't think we terribly value, even though actually the Islam did have a beautiful era of progress, but I don't think anyone particularly values their contributions to humanity and so on. And so Paro, etc., Poras was gross and coarse, not in Rome, is sort of, we identify Rome with best maybe administration kind of organization, but in terms of their cultural value as such, and in terms of what they contributed to civilization, yes, on the practical level they contributed a lot, but nothing in the spirit really, in the big picture. Greece is different. Greece is basically the root and the source for much that we value as being noble and nicer and a lot more civilized. It's something that Greece arouses a very, very positive feeling in us. It's interesting what you can find today with Google. I needed to dig up some art. I'd written once for Eish HaTorah many, many years ago, an article. It was in the Jewish Observer, and Eish posted it. It was called V'Choshech Z'Yavon, that darkness is Greece, the Medrash. And I explained whatever it was an article about explaining that Chazal. And lo and behold, there is some sort of pan-Hellenic society that took me to task the fanatical anti-Hellenic rabbi, Rabbi Lopiansky. And it was really amazing. They don't sound terribly literate, but it was interesting that some people actually dug it up. But Greece is, be it as it may, the culture and civilization that Greece brought into the world is positive. And we need to see it as positive. So, yeah, they happen to get into a fight with us. But how do we deal with them as Yavan in a much more essential way? The one who we're reading from is Zashan Shafal Hirsch. I just would like to sort of sketch very briefly. Everyone feels they're familiar with his life, but really, Reb Sham Shafal Hirsch, it was very unusual. He was born in 1808. He passed away in 1888, about a month after Hanukkah, actually. And he was a combination of two things that I think we would find it hard today to find anyone that has those two traits. On the one hand, he was very open to the culture of the world. He found it valuable. And if you take a look at, there was a famous historian, Gretz, who has written one of the first major histories and still considered to be sort of the bedrock for future histories. He was a rabbinical student, Gretz, who had questions in Emunah. He wrote to Rashan Shafal Hirsch, who was 28 at the time. Rashan Shafal Hirsch took him to his house, and they studied together for 3 years. And he writes, the Chavrusashaf was, they would get up 4 in the morning, they would learn, and Rashan Shafal Hirsch was very organized, they were Germans, and they would learn in the morning, they would learn Gemara, Tehillim, and Kant. And that was what they read together. And it would be hard to find, even Torah Mada people, but getting up 4 in the morning for Kant would be, I think, a big stretch. On the other hand, when they read something by Heine, I think it was, that he felt was bad, Rav Shamsfar Hirsch says, we need to burn the book. And it wasn't theirs, it was in the library. So he was insistent. He said, this is bad, this is kfira, it's wrong, it's evil, and he insists to get rid of it. I don't think you would ever find today such a kanos mixed with such an openness. And I think that's the reason why he's looked with favor by everyone, because his openness wasn't seduced by the culture of the world. He was boss, and he could decide what was good, what was passable, and what was evil, and make a decision and threaten to burn the book. It's something today, you couldn't find somebody getting up 4 in the morning to read Kant would burn the books also. So it's just not a combination that we could think of. He was, and his Torah der Cheretz was a fascinating shita. It really, really was an openness to take what's good. And on the other hand, he was a tremendous kanoi against all that was bad. He also, as much as he had a sense of universality of Judaism, and the idea that you need to, Judaism incorporates everything and everybody, on the other hand, what he felt that the communities living together, that having the general community which was non-religious and perhaps anti-religious, he didn't want to be subordinate, and he started what was called the Austritt, which means to leave the community. This, I mean, I don't think we appreciate how kanoi this was. The equivalent of that would be Satmar not recognizing the Jewish state. Same idea, that if you don't believe in their principles, you can't be part of it. That was Satmar's attitude to the state, and that was Hashanah Shel Bechoresh's attitude towards the general Jewish community. He left it and demanded that everyone with him leave it. He fought tremendous battles, not all that successful. And on the other hand, his works are full of a sense that Judaism is a universal message and not just for the shtiebel. It's not just what to serve for Kiddush for the shtiebel. It deals with a globe of 9 billion people and what's their mission in life and what's the what's the message for the world. So it's very fascinating. And if anyone can deal with this appropriately and help us understand the good that was Yavin and the bad that Yavin was and where the fork in the road splits, I think he would be extremely good at it. His writings were almost all in German, mostly in German. I don't read German. They've been translated to English. I find the English difficult. It's a heavy... The person who translated it was a German person. He spoke English well, but it was a very German mindset, and it's very heavy and ponderous and archaic. It has the full brunt of the German influence, and that doesn't make for pleasant reading. They've retranslated much of it into Hebrew, from the German to Hebrew. I find the Hebrew a lot more beautiful, especially since you're dealing with the psukim, and it really, really is extremely, extremely uplifting. This particular mimer is taken from a most of his writings were collected, except for Chorev, Arat Safin, his commentaries on Tehillim and Chumash. Everything else was collected. This is called B'Maglei Shana. It's a collection on Yom Tovim. It's quite long. I'm going to pull the pieces that I think are the important nekudos where we can get the thread of his thought and so on. So let's take a look. And again, we'll try to read a bit the Hebrew, and I'll try to explain so that we get the flow of it. Okay, it's the second page, Kuf Pei Dalet. Now, I also added, we're not going to do it, but at the very end, I attached an extraordinary piece, at the very last page over here, from a sefer called the Akedah. The Akedah was by a giant in Jewish thought who lived at the end of the Spanish era, the end of the 1400s. His sefer Akedah sits like 5 volumes of Chumash. It's an extraordinary work. It is not. It used to be considered one of the something that you had to learn. People don't have patience for it. It's very long and so on. When I put out the sefer collected thing on the Chumash we do, I took a lot of pieces. I cut and edited so that you can stay with the point and not with all the digressions. This is a piece on Vayishlach where he deals with comparing natural human morality with Torah morality. The boundaries, the borderlines, and how do we see natural human morality versus what the Torah given one and so on. It's if you'll have time and patience and the ability, it's a piece that's really, really very fundamental. But let's get back to our piece of Kuf Pei Dalet. He speaks about The origin of Hanukkah is from a halachic word called Megillas Tainis, which lists all the bad events and all the yeshuas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. He said two things were left from Megillas Tainis. We don't follow, we don't fast or not fast on the days of Megillas Tainis. We don't celebrate those in Tovim, except for Hanukkah and Purim. He says, Oifei HaChagim Alolu Tavua B'Chotam Hatzalah. The way in which we celebrate those Yom Tovim have to do with the type of rescue. On Purim, he said, what threatened us immediately was physical extermination, and therefore we celebrate it physically. Nitzchona shel ha'or l'choshech b'Chanukah, the triumph of light on darkness of Chanukah, misbatei b'ner hazareach v'nanor ha'tahor. That we see from the candle. We don't celebrate the courage and the strength of the Maccabim and the battlefield, nor their political successes in reestablishing their own rule, their home rule. Ki'im es adlokas haner v'sem shechusa sham mikdash. What we celebrate is the candle that's lit and the Beis HaMikdash that's continuing. Alkein on a kerem l'ner zed ner Chanukah. In other words, the rekindling of some sort of spiritual content of Klai Yisrael. Because so yes, the Maccabim were brave. Yes, we won victories. Yes, the Yevanim imperiled us to some degree, but that wasn't the main point. And now he begins his thesis. It was the first clash between two perspectives on life. Two different cultures. Till this very day, they grapple with each other, struggling for who is ahead. He obviously means here when he's including Judaism, he's speaking about his own Kehillah and their struggles with the culture of Yavon. I think in a bigger picture, all religion versus secularism, humanism of sorts, that's secular. I think that's the bigger picture. Hayavonis vayadus, Hellenism and Judaism, Elu shnei yisoides haruchnim, those are the two spiritual pillars. Their cultures and their deeds, mehavim es toldos his patos asukulam, are really the birth of humanity. The first time they squared off was in those days of Hanukkah in Judea. The struggle between these two perspectives are still ongoing. Hamischaris al Shulton Chukai Yisrael, struggling for the upper hand on the spiritual identity of Klal Yisrael. Hanevuah Rishayna Shem B'Torahi. Where's the source for this clash? Where does it come from? So he says, the first prophecy in the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Adam and to Cain, and there was conversation. Those conversations are not prophecies in the sense of a future vision. They're God communicating with man about the here and the now. The first prophecy written in the Torah is Yaft Elokim LeYefes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do Yaft to Yefes. V'yishkom Bo LeShem, but he will dwell in the tents of shame. V'yehei Knan Eved Lomo, and Knan becomes their servant. Now, this is obviously from Noach. Noach had three children, Shem, Cham, and Yafes. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, he will dwell in the tents of Shem. Cham will be subservient to his two brothers. And Yaft Elokim LeYafes. We translate the word Yaft as meaning somewhere, something from beauty. Hashem Shvul Hirsch and his Pirush and Chumash is unique that he looks at the etymology of words and he has very, very innovative insights. And he says a different explanation for that word. Hamilo yeft, hiloshen hifil shalashorish pito. The word patpito in Hebrew means to seduce. Like mefate, when we have a parasha in Torah, if somebody seduces a young woman, he has to pay a certain amount. We have the word pesi, which means a fool who is easily seduced, easily taken for a ride. So pito, there's actually a very, very sharp phrase we say in one of the piyutim that we don't say on Rosh Hashanah, afatenu b'shofar. I will try to seduce HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the sound of the shofar. So the word yefes is seduction. Milosh pito dehainu. Hashem yiten li yefes es ha-shlita al rikshos ha-amim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give Yavon the ability to influence, to pull along nations. But avol kvod Hashem ale adomois yishkoin rak bol Hashem. But kvod Hashem is only in Ol Hashem. So there's a fascinating partnership here. It's reminiscent a little bit of Moshe and Aaron. Moshe is the Elohim, the one who is the boss to Paro, and Aaron speaks. In other words, there's the ability to have the truth, and there's the ability to draw people to that. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I am splitting the ability to move people in a certain direction. Yavon has the ability to do things that will move people in a certain direction, and Shem has the truth. Ha'oma Yavoni omad b'piskata tachbut shel kol amei Yefes. Greece is one of those nations of Yefes, and it is the best, most successful one. Ha'yavonim horu l'chol yesa amim es ha'yofim. Yavon brought into the world the concept of the beautiful. I want to stop a minute. I'm going to sort of jump a little bit. I'm going to introduce a point that he's going to say later, but I think it's important to bring it in here because this is where he's saying it. A person has different levels. A human being has different levels of development. A baby can respond to certain positive stimuli and certain negative stimuli. The common denominator of the stimuli that a baby can respond to is they're all physical and palpable. Warm, soft, sweet, soothing. That's what a baby responds to and draws back at the harsh, the cold, the hard, and so on. Beauty is a second step. It's not something that is automatic at birth. The elementary physical senses are automatic at birth. That's what you have. It's there are some senses that are not so simple. And to turn people's attention to the aesthetic is something that required a big step forward. Chum was somebody who really, really was into things that physically are pleasurable. The idea of something being aesthetic, harmonious, and things of that nature, that was really a step forward. He says, and this is a crucial sentence in the thesis developing, Hayevanim hayru l'chol yesa ames hayofer. Greece taught the nations the beautiful, the aesthetic. The Garsu, and their thesis was, ki kol mashu yofer hu gam toiv. The equivalence of the beautiful and the good, that which is symmetrical, that which is harmonious. It could be in math. Math was a form of aesthetics because of the harmony of math, because of the symmetry of math. And music and things of that nature, the human body when developed properly so that it's graceful, all of those things were considered to be the good and the beautiful. They were, for all practical purposes, synonymous. Ve'ilu b'piskas atar b'shem ne'shem omad eiver hu'om ivri. On the other hand, the height of Bnei Shem, the apex of Bnei Shem, is eiver hu'om ivri, which became a Klal Yisrael. Ha'noites holol ritzoy nakel. They turned their tents to ask themselves, what is God demanding from them? They build a mikdash devoted to justice and love. And it's just love. So you have two directions. The beautiful and the good or the righteous. Very beautiful turn of phrase. He says both of these cultures, civilizations, have their mission to cover the crass erva, the crass physicality of man, the part of man that's animal. Both of them are taking, drawing man away from the animal self. Both of them, their mission is to lift a person up to something more human and more divine. And to try and to rein in the chum in a person. Now, that's obvious, it goes without saying, that even though in the Chumash they appear as three separate, there's chum, there's shem, and there's yafis, we all have elements of all three. And except some nations, some parts of it dominate more. But in every person himself, there's the chum, and there were two approaches in moving a person away from that. The third paragraph. Kol toldos hanushis ad yemenu. All of human history till this day, mehave mavak ratzuf al nevuah zu, is a constant struggle on this nevuah. I read it down just in English. On this stage of history, both types of cultures and nations appeared, tried to change people and tried to teach them what's right. And this was Yavon, which was the height of culture of Yefes, and Judaism, which is the height of Shem. Now he says, the next paragraph is where he explains what is the proper role of each one. In the prophecy of Noah, the bracha is on the Shechina in the tents of Shem. That's the goal. After we've been able to overcome our physical animal instinct, the developing of the senses by Yavon is there only to bring a person to want more. In other words, it is a vital step. If you take the baby who is just feeling things that are physical, and his whole life is physical, the next step is to develop a sense of something that's a step beyond that. You can't just dump Hashem on it, and he'll give very soon a demonstration of where it goes wrong, on a person that's physical and crass. You need to develop a certain refinement so that the person is ready for the next piece. For instance, we come to a person and say, you could be Tzelem Elokim. If the person is busy with his beer and his football game, those words don't even have where to go. But if a person has developed some refinement and he senses the word, there is more than what I feel here and now, we already have him a step forward to bringing him someplace else. So ideally, Yavon would make them refined and have them become capable of going the next step. And now he's going to explain the next section on the bottom of the page. What was the outlook of the nations before Yavon? What Yavon did and where they stopped short? He says, the culture of nations and before Yavon, his basisa al tofos hachitzoni shel hateva vakochs al inushim. It was based on external phenomena and a sense that somebody's in control. So your typical Ovad Avodah Zarah, your typical primitive nation, lived in a scary world where there were gods of thunders and lightning and gods of floods and gods of this and gods of that, who were playing with him. And he was terrified, and that's where he was struggling. So he says, "Es neroisof shal ateva, the frightening aspects of nature, bitu ha'amim bepsilim betzavot munis." They had all these statues and these avodah zaras. They worshipped, they begged them, and they tried to appease them. It was a sense of trying somehow to appease those outside forces that are wreaking havoc with their lives. Ha'odem ha'yachid, a person, ruas atzmei batel netul kol erech. A person saw no value of himself. He was a little pawn in this great battle of these so strong forces. Only kings and great warriors could possibly fight all of those. And then he says the next paragraph. Hatargus Evanis. Then came the Greek culture. Hifnesas mabat adam pnima. It turned a person inwards. It aroused a certain sense of self-value. It said, people are big. They have a lot more. They're not these little scrawny pawns that the gods play with. These are big. You can think the whole world and come up with truths that are true for stars light years away. You can. A person is a huge, huge being in terms of his, he can create extraordinary works of art. The human potential and what a human being is, that is what Greece gave us. It put humanity in perfection as the greatest thing in this world. And therefore, they projected themselves into gods. So if man is the greatest thing in the world, then gods are just simply supermen. But that's what it is. It's not the wind, and it's not storm, and it's not thunder. It's men. Some men live on this mountain, that mountain. But they projected the greatness of humanity. Adleifai Yavonis, next paragraph. Until Hellenism came, hispatchu ruach ha'odem rikshosef raktach sashpatzo b'gechaim. Human potential was stunted. We only worried about appeasing these terrible gods that were playing with us. There was no sense of godless ha'odem, no sense of greatness of a person. He understood, he lived in fear, and a person, his worship was only a way to cope. But he himself remained coarse, cruel, very limited vision, and benighted. Yovan, on the other hand, aroused the mind, the feelings, the sentiments, everything about a person to try to develop his spirit. And all of a sudden, a person can think, a person can project incredible beauty in speech, in music, in painting, in art. The human potential flowered. And that was the other. So he says, now he says, okay, so that's the good part. That's the good news. So what's the bad news? L'chura, he says, the bottom paragraph, Dinu shenisma ha'kima nevua yafakim yafas. Wonderful. We've come from being primitive, benighted, little beings, little ants, to magnificent human beings. Sheitarbus yafas agil esia b'yavanas. This tarbus of yafas, everybody is, it's becoming more and more, it's become more popular, it's taken over nations, they've moved towards civilization. It has reigned in the coarseness of a person, it has aroused his taste for beauty, and so on and so forth. It has given him a distaste for the coarse and the bad, made him much more noble, and so on. Isn't that beautiful? And then he says the second paragraph, and this is very typical of a first sort of world. It's not for naught that HaKadosh Baruch Hu dressed the world in a cloak of beauty. In other words, if Hashem wanted us to worship Him, He needed to give us a stomach, a brain, food, and that's it. But this whole, it's a beautiful world. And we have a sense of beauty, of color, of texture, of symmetry, of harmony, all those things. I once, just as a side thing, Rav Chas Kosani, who was one of the big Balei Mussar of Shiva Chevron, he died in 69. He once said, you say in benching, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zonas Olam B'tuvoi B'chein B'chesed of Rachamim. With Chein, with Chesed of Rachamim. So he said, Chesed of Rachamim, I understand what that means. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us food, drink, and so on. What's the Chein? So he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created an apple to be gray, soggy, and tasteless. And we'd eat it because you have no choice. God forbid we're in a hospital, they put the IV line in, and the flavor and the color is irrelevant. It's what keeps you alive, and that's the end of it. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it so much flavor, so much texture, so rich and nuanced in all the different flavors that are there, and aroma. He said, it's chein. HaKadosh Baruch Hu serves everything in this world with a lot of chein. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu draped this world with beauty. Whether it's a sunset, whether it's a mountain, whether it's snow. We live in a world where HaKadosh Baruch Hu injected beauty. It's not for naught that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this concept of music where you can have harmonious sounds creating such a beautiful effect. It's not for nothing HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us those senses to appreciate them. Ha'adam, it says, Ha'adam mispa'em u'misragesh lemara shemayim zrumi kechavim. A person is overwhelmed when he sees heavens filled with stars, sun coming up, lemara chino v'yefesh per lavev, to see the beauty of a flower that's blossoming. It lifts a person up. It does. It elevates. So the person who's just busy with his little material things steps back and says, oh, there's something more than just a taste and a flavor and so on. I remember when I was in camp, as a young boy, we had a counselor from England. I still remember his name, Joey Grunfeld. And he was a dying Grunfeld's, I think, grandson. And in those days, people didn't travel that much, and it was a novelty. An Englishman, everybody was always busy imitating his accent, and you know, it was kind of was a whole to-do about an Englishman. And there was one, it was a very beautiful campsite, and one day he was standing there, a few of us, you know, a few of us sitting around, there was this beautiful sunset, and he said something, oh, that's just magnificent. And everybody started chiming in with the English accent, overwhelming this. And he got very nervous. You Americans, it's blintzes and cream, and that's all you're about, nothing else. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the sunset into the world so we can lift our eyes out of the blintzes and cream and appreciate something. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it. And he says, and that's why he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a person a sense for it. I'm just sort of going through very quickly. And Yovan's job was to have been to underscore this. And then the next paragraph, the last one. Alpha became Aimba Betarvis Yovan Elegar Inshal Emes, a single service. And yet, it's only a little grain. It's a seed of the truth, but not the truth itself. Let's see the next page, which is where he goes into, where he starts explaining what the issues are with the arrested development of the world the way it was by Yavon. Kol koicha shel tarvis Yavon hu l'oyer es haregesh v'atzimon l'koros emes. Yavon can bring a person to thirst for truth, to want something more in life. Avol hi eina misugeles l'agia l'klal l'koros emes asois. But she can't reach the truth. Philosophy asks teasing questions. Socrates is much, much better at cutting apart someone else's argument than presenting his own point. He actually doesn't present much of his own points. The one thing you come out at the end of the dialogues is it's much better to ask the questions, to be the professor asking the questions, than the poor student trying to give an answer. Because even the professor, once you have to give an answer, it's not so good. But he says it can give a person a thirst for truth. But it can't reach the truth. Ein tarbus zu yodas lahashiv ala sheilois vechidas achayim hanakzavatom. It's a culture that does not know the answer to the riddle of life that bothers a person. It has ideas and sort of very, very clouded points. But nochas built in vusasais with axioms that haven't really, that are not solid, and with theories that are imaginary. They're not based on fact. But he says, Omnam ruach adam nivra lahav likat emes. A person's life, a person was given shama to try to understand the truth. Avul kolz man shu misyamad liyaz gam haboyre. If he thinks he's God also, shu noisna megalas emes, that he's the one who is going to set and reveal the truth. The kolz man shalov levakash atshuva shaloysav v'se'avkos emes levavoy. If he looks for the answers in what his heart tells him, it's going to play tricks on him, and it's going to be, and he's going to be bitterly disappointed. In other words, and this is his extraordinary point. There are two parts for a person to declare truth. We need two parts. We need to arouse a search, like the at psachloi. We need nobody. If the person is busy in his steak and in his beer, he's not. No truths will make any dent on him. We need to make a dent first, and then we need to find truth. And those are two separate things. Yavon arouses the questions that are asked, arousing the person a search, and only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can fill it. I remember many years ago, I was listening in Israel on Independence Day. They grant a prize for, like, it's equivalent of the, like, Nobel Prize, the Israel Prize. And they have, I think, a dozen fields, and one person answers on behalf of all of them. I guess Jews don't like to give everybody to speak. There's no end to it, so they have one shliach tzibur. So one year, I happened to be tuned in, I was listening, and the one that responded on behalf of everybody else was a lady called Professor Ruth. I think Ruth is her last name. I know she's translated many works of philosophy into Hebrew. I've seen that. So I think that must be her field. But she said that she spoke of it. If everyone that I don't know if she's the humanities or the academia or whatever it is, it represents man's eternal search or infinite search for the truth that I'll never find. And she said it very poetically, but if you have to be practical about that, first of all, I think she's right. I couldn't have said it better. It's basically what he's saying. And the point is, there is no way, it's just like no computer can debug itself. Because your own mistakes are built into the system. So I can ask somebody else, tell me what I'm doing wrong. But I will have a very hard time figuring out myself, because whatever my bias is, it's built into it. And besides which, the truth, so man can become the kli kibul for emes, we would say in Hebrew, but the emes comes from someplace else. He says, Torah tarbus yavon, the second paragraph, tarbus yavon lo das lo ora tshukol atzol hishyus. The culture of Yavon knows how to arouse in a person's desire to be noble. Omlam ein lo kli mida achel atzol hazu. It has no way of giving that except for beauty, physical beauty, and harmony. Brahm, Hashifal Atzolazu, where does this lead to, this search for noblement? So Shimshon Rak Mania Lismoyach Al Chayav Hu. Basically, I enjoy my speculation. A good philosopher enjoys speculating. Lehenas min yediyal chayav atziv remes yeshusa. It's basically sort of loops back on itself. I enjoy being noble because people enjoy being noble are noble people. It'll never get to where it's supposed to get to. V'chol hasega eina lelito shitche shal ishius b'nei mesach etzayim. All it accomplishes is a very nice polish on the outside of a person in his manners and so on. V'lo mitachas lemata shal taos nachutizu, under this mantle of culture, mistachim taivis behamius v'tanugis gasim v'yosef. You have Bahamius, and you have very similar animal. It just dressed beautifully. Gamam ishim hamaskilim beYosef Yavon. Even the most intelligent and learned people in Yavon lo yadu es chachmas achayim asheifir leshas chayim kulam. They didn't know the secret of life. How do you do every bit? How do you talk to your neighbor? What don't you talk? How do you greet a person? What do you owe a person? They only showed themselves, they were cultured and special in those moments of when they read the poetry, when they unveiled a painting, you know, when they performed a beautiful piece. But yes, in those moments when a person is really caught up with those elevated feelings, he does become elevated. His turn of phrase is awesome. He says he plants in the garden of his spirit, synthetic flowers produced by his imagination. V'ulam, he says, on regular days, in his day-to-day life, his personality actually contradicts what he believes. He does the uncouth and the filthy in his life. And his days pass by quite on a low madrega. So Yavon, because it's standing where it's standing, it's sort of an arrested development. I want to read something I came across. I was debating should I read it or not. I just had a big Yetzirah to read it. And I gave it to my Tzahara, I guess. I have to be able to find it also and see if I have it. It's something that, if I don't have it, then I guess I was supposed to read it, but let's see. I guess I could use some organization in my packets, but I'll say it outside once I've said it. Let's see if I can find it here. No. I thought I had brought it here, but I have a book at home. It's a book about different chilukei days of physics by somebody, Kamut, I think his name is. A recent book about different approaches, the arguments between Einstein and some of his contemporaries and so on. It's a book that deals with that, has nothing to do with anything else. In it, they have little vignettes, biographical vignettes, about these people. Now, Einstein was by no stretch of imagination a religious Jew, but he has a very, very favorable, if we were to pick a person who's a man of culture and so on, we'd really have to pick him that represents a lot of ideals. He was a pacifist. He smoked a pipe. You can't go wrong smoking a pipe and, you know, kind of have a very kind face. And I don't mean to belittle him. I do think the person was you know, everything that he spoke and said was very. There's a part there, and again, Chava, I don't have it on me, but I thought I took it with me. He had an unhappy first marriage. Okay, and Einstein. And with two kids, he divorced her. He found someone else that he liked much better, and that was fine. But his wife did not want to leave him, so he wrote out a contract with her, and what conditions will stay. In the end, he didn't, and he left her. And they have the contract printed. It's taken out of one of his works and so on, one of his letters, or collected letters type of stuff. And the contract goes: she always must have the laundry done on time. The meals are to be brought to his room. She is never to expect any type of physical connections. She's never to do this, that, the other thing. You read, your jaw drops. A Shifra Kneinis probably has more rights than that. It's really, really shocking. And, you know, it's one thing if you would have left some happy marriage and went on further. You know, I didn't see any fall down. But I was saying to myself, so was he playing a game when he was so nice and wonderful? I don't think so. But the nicer things was a world vision. It was like, you know, there are some people that are nearsighted, but when you're farsighted, you can't see what's under your nose. So yes, nearsighted people are only worried about what's over here. But the men of great vision don't have time for these little things about, he's worried about humanity, not about his wife and kids, and not about the feelings of his wife. What is it like when you get, okay, you know, do the bed, do the laundry, the linens, and shut up and keep out of my way? Like, I was saying to myself, I couldn't find a better example, especially Lanzmann of Hirsch, than this. It's if anyone really wants to know, I you can call me later. I will. I mean, I've actually put it on PDF. I saved it because it was so stunning to me. But that's what happens. It gets to a place, but there are no answers and there's no direction for how to live a life in all of its practical aspects. The most philosophy can give you is a philosophy, an idea, an ideal. It doesn't go down to all the details. It can't go down to details. And if you don't have the details down, you know, you can have the theories of physics well, but if you don't know how to screw the thing into the machine, it's not going to work, even if you have the theories down. Now let's skip over to Kuf Tzadik Dalet. Tarbus Yom Shoefes L'Tapeach Eschus Achein VaYoyfi. The culture of Yavan strives to develop the senses of beauty. So that you have a beautiful life. If you ask someone, what's the purpose of art and music and so on? The answer is to enrich your life. And also to provide some sort of measuring rod for a person. This allows a person also to become enmeshed in all the perversions and all that is bad and wrong inside him. Because at the end of the day, the message is a nicer, better, more enjoyable life. So it starts with music and art, and then it goes to whatever I feel like. And then he says there's another religion, which is obviously Christianity, that says a person should not enjoy this world at all. In opposition to this, what is it that makes man great and noble when he is like Hashem? In other words, Hashem is the ultimate of good, and modeling myself to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we now have an answer outside of man. In other words, instead of the Yevanim took man and they said man is great and therefore man is God or gods, we say that man can be like God. It's not we've made God in our image. It's we are making ourselves, modeling ourselves after a ruchnistic image of God. It's what teaches a person the difference between the profane and the sacred, bein tzedek la'ovel, between righteousness and wrong, bein kedusha l'shchisus, bein mashachov l'amok mashabazeh beinov. It also gives me very clear indicators of the things that are right and wrong and so on. Hatoyre kovasos gevulos chirusa b'tor adam hamurkav migashmas ruchnis. The Torah gives us boundaries. We are not perfect. We're physical. So Yichud is Asa, because we're bodies also. And we can't let ourselves go all the way, because part of us is not ready to go all the way. And therefore, the boundaries of defining what is right and what is wrong, and what I can do and I can't do, is all given. The Torah tells the person, for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your Creator, keep yourself holy. Keep yourself pure. Devote HaKadosh Baruch Hu your life in even the most physical of your senses. Let's go down till, and here almost towards the end of the thing, one paragraph before the end. Yachsim Elu, all of these, he says the Torah goes down to every detail, a relationship with your friend, with your wife, family members, community, different parts of the nation, and so on. Yachasim Elu, these relationships, Einam Tluyim Leibir Rikshas Halev, they're not what you feel is right. Should form your koshalos and lichos. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. It's not, you know, what you feel is not, is given to moods, and that can't possibly be an absolute measure. Gamla l'sichlo shadam, not human mind. Shalafamim shikula of leif shemaser shal tzedek v'yoyshe, v'lamit shadavim koizim iskavak an sanoichis. You know, your mind, of course, sometimes people say they get upset and they're very righteous, isn't that? At the end of the day, it's because their own personal thing. The mind is not perfect, it's far from perfect. It has built-in bias. My mind is my mind, and it has me as it's the driver. So it's not going to give me the truth. And so on and so forth. And therefore, he says, the people who organize their lives, by the way, the Torah bid them, they have truth and beauty because it is harmonious. It's not a contradiction to harmony, it is harmonious. And the Yevanim will never reach it, and they search for it in vain because they wanted to find it in their circle of self, not reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's only HaKadosh Baruch Hu that takes everything in to the Spirit that can give it. Let's take a look finally. Kuf Tzadik Zayin is going to be the last piece we want to see here. In that first battle of Yavan and Yehuda, he says, take a look. The other nations wanted to conquer us. Rome was upset. The only time Rome was upset was when we wanted a political independence. Other nations want us to worship Avodah Zarah. Each one had their things. He said, Sin osam shal yivonim hufnasa bi'ika negra mitzvahs maisis. If you take a look at the gzeiras, Chazal bring all sorts of gzeiras, the common denominator is they all related to practical mitzvahs. And he brings here a list. He was a tremendous baki, and I mean, I remind you, this is pre-computer era, and he really had to know his things before he wrote them down. Gozer matzos shoske b'teirul mula b'nehem shesh moshabis, and all tons and tons of things. They were directed against the practical mitzvahs. The Hellenism found it to be very, very upsetting. And he says before, look at the paragraph before, Alexander's armies had victories across Asia, across, you know, the Middle East and Asia. But greater than that was Hellenism. Hellenism took hold real fast. People liked it. Anyone who was a little bit more developed said, it's beautiful, it's nice, it's wonderful. He said, only the Jews were, Judea was the one that didn't like it. And they stood against it. Let's look at the last page at Kuf Tzadik Ches, and then we'll see Kuf Tzadik Ches. Kuf Tzadik Ches in the middle paragraph. Lo yhoye ze Yehudia Maccabi Gibra Chayil Ashenitzeach Antiochus. It wasn't Yehuda Maccabi as the great military hero that overcame Antiochus. Kim Hanera Yehudi. The Jewish light, the Jewish lamp, that overcame the outside luster of Yavan. Their father, the spirit of Matzioh, on that is where is on the rock of Matzioh was where they dashed the idols of Yavan. He said, Ruach ze, it was that spirit, v'loy cher v'amulchama, not the sword of the battle. And not even the fact that the Hashmonaim became kings of Israel again and all that. That wasn't what saved the Jewish people. It was the ruach of Kedusha that the Kohen brought with them. And then finally, Kuf Tzadik Tes, the list, where he finishes. Kol zman she'ezo yevani chitzoyne v'koizev ma'ayim lishlom ruach ha'torah eschus ha'shol tarot yisrael v'yvoisev. Anytime when a beautiful, when the lust of Yavan threatens Klal Yisrael, and this is, it's so hard to, for us to see it, to understand where he's coming. In the 1800s in Germany, Judaism, as we know it, had collapsed. He couldn't find in Frankfurt a minion of Shomer Shabbos families. And if you look at the reforms, at the initiatives and the things that they pressed for, being Germans, what bothered them was the following issue: that German religion and cathedrals are magnificent, beautiful, formal, and so on. The shtiebels are shtiebels, and everything, bring an organ in, because an organ is, wear a uniform. I think they were called tailors, if I'm not mistaken. All of those things were because the enlightened, the educated, the aristocratic, that was the tzur of it. And that pulled them away. And he said, every time that this threatens Kalis, and he's speaking about the battle that he led, when the spirit of the times, or the zeitgeist, tries to draw away Jews from Torah, Kasher Rabim no machatar bas Yavon, when many scream after the culture of Yavon, umistapkin b'shitkes kazav v'goyin, and they are content themselves with the appeal of the outside and the surface, b'yosim lehutach ginunim chitzayin sipa gitzar, and what draws them is simply the ceremonial, the outside ceremonial. And when Yavan has managed to penetrate even into the shul, Vakohanim is a play, it means the rabbis who are like priests. They use this, they sort of hijack this and make their own reformed temples out of it and so on. Gam Azalin al Dasisko, we also have to remember, only in the recesses of Emes and Amuna, on the Moitzim Amon in the floor of the Yoifim Musaruchim, that's where we find beauty, spirituality, morality. And we need to light Chanukah with an extraordinary simcha. To thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we've kept that light in our house. He said, it's come a time when in the schools they're not teaching our children. In the home and the family, you have to kindle that light in your children. And last line, so just review very briefly. His point is, in man, there are, and in mankind, there are three layers. There is the physical, that is that man is identical with an animal, and biologically it's just about the same, and that is the coarse and the bad in the world, and that represented by chum and every person's own physicality. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then presented, gave another section of person, of peoples, and that is to draw a person to something beyond that. To draw a person out of that shell of physical gratification and self, and to open up a window to look out. And that's the world of Yefes, the world of beauty, of harmony, of understanding of what's around, and so on and so forth. And that is what we would call, under the big banner of civilization, and so on, But that is, if it becomes an end to itself, it is wrong. Because you're turning the question into an answer, and there's no answers coming from there. By the Shana de Lishol, when it says we have to teach him to ask a question, so he's not going to provide his answers. Asking a question means you recognize the need to know, but you don't know it. And that, if it's kitikuno, if the world would do it right, that would open up the world to saying, I must search for those answers because life is meaningless without it. And I now become a kli kibul. I now have the ability to absorb that answer and understand. I start by seeing the divine in myself. But the divine in myself cut off from the divine is me again, and it's worthless. When the divine in the person, when the Tzelem Elokim pushes a person to search for Elokim, that's when you have the Shlemus of the Adam, and that's when the entire person fits together. It's true and harmonious. It's both Yofi and Emes together.
Married, one state.
Jacob Keller.